I am not going to go through all of her biog. It is extremely long. She is indeed a distinguished woman. But a few of the things I'd like to tell you, that she is an alternate U.S. delegate to the International Women's Year Conference that was held in Mexico City. She's been president, advised, and consulting corporation, consulting on women's issues, politics, and career education. She's also been a member of the Executive Committee, National Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, Staff Assistant, Office of Congressman Frazier, Campaign Manager Frazier for Congress, also a national president, Women's Equity Action League, legislative chairperson and national board member. She's been director of WEAL, Women's Equity Action League, a fund internship project, a Ford Foundation-sponsored project. Also a regional coordinator for the Carter Mundell presidential campaign, Upper Greater Lakes region in Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin. She's been a counselor, presidential personnel, the White House in Washington, and she is presently at the State Department in charge of Office of Women in Development, Agency for International Development. Ladies and gentlemen, won't you join me in welcoming our last distinguished woman in government, briefing from the top for the afternoon, Arvlyn Frazier.
I don't know if I should be here or there.
Either way, it's comfortable for you.
But if I speak there, I bother the people across the hall.
No, that's not true. The man that's taping outside had his recorder turned up, I understand. It was not us. So he promises me that he will turn it down.
What do you prefer?
I'll adjust it.
Okay. I'm always a little thrown when I get asked, who am I and how did I get here? I had to do this a couple of, weeks or maybe a month ago now for the Girl Scout executives, and I'm not quite sure I've recovered from it yet, because it's kind of interesting looking back at how did it happen. And I guess I'm more interested now because of all the new books that have come out on women and women's careers and women as managers and so on. Let me share a little bit of the common elements that came out of that Girl Scout appearance, because there were four of us. It was absolutely fascinating because we ranged in age, I would guess, from mid-50s to maybe mid-30s. None of us had really planned our careers, and I've been thinking since then, do men really plan their careers? Every single one of us took advantage of all kinds of opportunities, and I suppose took advantage may be a bad word, but I mean that constructively. I hope we didn't trample over anybody or damage them, and we tried. I mean we at least deliberately didn't take advantage of people, I hope. We also, all of us, shared a great interest in learning. Not so much in education, but in learning. And we also apparently got bored pretty easily and moved on to something else. Those seem to me, I guess, the common elements. Two of us ended up in government. One from a long career in government and worked herself up to an appointive position. The other one, me, who sort of moved in as a political appointee. And I can defend the political appointee process. I feel strongly about it. It is a very integral or integral part of our governmental system. It's the way we change policies and the way we change governments. And the, one of the things that I've learned in international work is that our governmental system is very unique, and it is difficult to compare and contrast with any other group. And when you deal internationally, one of the first mistakes you make is assuming that everybody operates like us and with the same system, and that's not true. What else can I say? I was born and raised on a farm, and I now discover that that first 17, 18 years of my life is very valuable in my current job, because as at AID, the Agency for International Development, working in the Women in Development Office, because most women in the developing world, and I'm not sure if it's in the world, live in rural areas. And I've discovered that a lot of people at AID have never been outside the capital city or across the Appalachians occasionally, I think. So that I find that most of the experiences I've had are fairly relevant to the next one. That's all part of the learning process, I guess, and using what you learn in the next thing. I also see a kind of pattern. Even though it wasn't planned, there's still a pattern. I am eternally fascinated by the political process. I can sit over at that. I'm usually nervous. I can't sit at a meeting for more than an hour and a half, and my husband always says, then I got to get up and leave. But the meeting's over so far as I'm concerned. Except I can sit in that convention from 8 in the morning till midnight and not worry about eating, and just am fascinated by the whole process, mesmerized almost, and very aware of what's going on and actively participating. So that the whole political process, as I said, fascinates me, and I'm always interested in how the parts fit into the whole. And I'm very unhappy in my new job when they won't tell me how it all fits together, because if I know the sort of theory or the philosophy of the organization or the problem or whatever, then the parts make sense. If I see only the parts, I really get nervous and unhappy. And I think people, it was taken me, 50 some years to learn how I learn, but I have discovered that, I guess lately, that learning how you learn and how you need to know is terribly important if you're going to be kind of effective. I like organizing things and putting things together and seeing if I can make them work. That's in some ways what I've decided government and politics is all about. I like structure, but then I like structure so that it's there and useful, but you don't always have to use it just step by step by step. I guess I think I feel very strongly about the need for women in all parts of government and all areas of life that are important to other people, which includes government but includes lots of other things. And I learned this at a conference. I learned how to verbalize it at a conference of women legislators a few years ago, where we were talking with them about, did they serve a unique role in their legislature? I mean, in the U.S. we elect people from constituencies, from geographic areas. They're supposed to go to the legislative body and represent that area, but then they're also supposed to represent the greater constituency. In addition, we decided And I remember a woman, a graceful black lady legislator from Georgia, whose name I cannot remember right now, but I can just grace. Yes, exactly. Verbalized this for the whole group and said, you know, I think that while we have this geographic representation job and while we have this representation, not only representation job, but a leadership job for the whole constituency, that is, say, the whole state of Georgia, first the district, then the state, and all the people in it, that women are also, perhaps for a while, she said, a part of our special constituency. Because if you have a legislature that is made up, and she used the analogy, I think, or maybe I have, I've told this story since, of white, male, middle-class lawyers. Does that legislature, if that's all that's in that legislature, if each one adequately represents their district, do they together adequately represent the whole? And I think the answer is no. And the same thing is, you've got to have the mix within the whole. And therefore, when a woman is elected to a legislature, she represents not only her district and not only the interests that she brings and the whole constituency, but women as well. She may represent them well or ill. I mean, we as women don't have to be perfect, and we don't have to be alike, and we sure as heck aren't going to agree. And we've got to oppose each other at times, and I have no problems voting against a woman if the man who's on the ballot is a better feminist and also of my party. But sometimes I don't vote straight party ticket either. I guess what I am saying is that is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And that is very, very true of any kind of organized group. I also think, well, let me carry that on a little bit. In order to adequately understand, let's say, the poverty issue, you don't have to have once been poor or hungry. It probably helps, but you still can vote rationally, I would guess, on that issue. Likewise, you don't have to be female, I don't think, to be right or wrong on abortion or to be qualified. It may help, however. Likewise, when a party or a president is making up his or her government, that official or group has to put together people who can represent the diverse interests in that group. And we do it from geographic district to, when we're dealing with legislative bodies, to the bigger body. The difference, other countries do it within the party. The parliamentary system, you elect a party, and then the party elects the government. And then that government is both the legislative and the executive. I'm a little far off, I realize, now from perhaps the beginning of who am I and how did I get here. Let me talk a little bit about what I'm doing now, which is coordinator for women in development at AID. 1973, there was a Percy Amendment adopted as part of the Foreign Assistance Act. That Percy Amendment said that in all our aid programs, women shall be considered, I have always trouble quoting this, that in recognition of the fact that women in developing countries play a significant role in economic production, family support, and the overall development process, USAID shall be administered so as to give particular attention to those programs, projects, and activities which tend to integrate women into the developing into the national economies of developing countries, thus improving their status, the status of individual and collectively women, and assisting the total development effort. Saying, in essence, what I was trying to say about government, that women are part of the whole system and should be and must be included. They are also part of the national economy and part of the development effort, and development is often not defined. Development means changing from a survival to society to a little more highly organized society. Development is sometimes used to mean industrialized, and sometimes it is said we are developed and they are developing. Well, we're still developing, and so are they. And often when, well, the best example of how women were overlooked in the development process is Africa, where women did and still do most of the agricultural work. Many of our aid programs, and our meaning the industrialized world, not just the U.S., went in and took our own cultural system with us, and the cultural system said men are farmers and women are housewives, and so we trained the men to be farmers, better farmers, when they weren't farmers at all. In many cases, we displaced women or gave the men the expertise to raise cash crops and left the women to raise subsistence crops, but moved them off the good land and created all kinds of problems. That's just one example of not looking at what is going on in a certain society and not seeing what women do. Women are often invisible to the rest of the world. Invisible, invisible in the sense of not being seen, but the seeing not registering. It's like my daughter once said to me, "Mom, you listen, but you don't hear." And we developers sometimes see, but they don't see. I don't know quite how to analogize that. So the job of my office is to make the male and female, make the developers see what's happening in a society and figuring out ways of how we can help the women in that society, both as women and as part of the whole society. Let me give you a couple of examples. Women grow and process the food. The majority of the food in the majority of the countries, spending many arduous hours in cultivating, grinding, and storing. I've got a little women in development pamphlet here that you can have, and if we run out, there's an exhibit across the way. They carry water, often walking many miles a day. Water, good, potable, fresh, clean water, is in very scarce supply in this world, and it doesn't come out of faucets all over the world. Sometimes it's kilometers, miles away, and gets carried on heads, shoulders, backs by women and children, generally, not men. And water projects are one of the crucial projects for women in development, because if you don't have to carry water, maybe you can go to school. And girls don't go to school nearly as much as boys for two reasons. One, they're needed at home, and second, people figure they'll just marry and raise children. Why should they go to school? Which then is a self-fulfilling prophecy. They keep having children because that's what they are only good for, it is thought in many places. They give the first most basic education to the next generation, but the percentage and, the number of illiterate women in the world is growing, partly because the population is growing, but partly because we really have not yet worldwide got any kind of literacy program for anybody, everybody, and less for girls. Women try to keep themselves and their children healthy, often in disease-ridden environments. And yet we are making progress. One of the places we're making progress really is in health. But we have a long ways to go. We thought we'd eradicated smallpox. Not quite. And one of the best things the whole UN system has done is in the area of health. And it is terribly important to the U.S., partly because more of our people travel than anybody else. And when we travel, we either get sick or we bring back illnesses, or we can immediately become carriers. Women participate actively in local affairs as men migrate from rural areas in search of employment. All over the world now, we have cash economies. You used to be able to live without cash. No place in the world can you now. Somebody's got to get money, and frequently the man migrates, leaving the woman to to feed the children. He may or may not be able to send money back. He may or may not send it back for a while. He may or may not be able to earn it any more than enough for himself. The problem of the female-headed household is a worldwide problem, and one that my office is going to work on. And when I say problem, I don't mean it's bad. I mean it exists, and we have to deal with it. These are the problems of women in rural areas and in urban areas. The women aren't much, if any, better off. Too few women in developing countries have the means to meet even the basic human needs for themselves and their families. And basic human needs is something you're going to hear about, I think, more and more in terms of development. In some ways, it's kind of the new fad in development, and yet it's the age-old problem. We were, for a while, for maybe like 20 years after World War II, we thought that if we put enough money in, we'd have the trickle-down theory of economic development. Well, we've now discovered that doesn't work, that you have to deal with people. And dealing with people is a lot more interesting, but it's also a lot harder work than just paving streets or sending money to build a road or something. Development planners often overlook what women contribute to the household economy and the local community worldwide, in this country as well as all over. What women produce without being paid for is not counted. I don't want to make a double negative, is not counted any place. In other words, when we count GNP, gross national product, if you're working in unpaid family labor, whatever it is, it doesn't get counted. If you take care of your own child, it's not counted. If you pay somebody else to take care of your child, it is counted. Or if you take care of somebody else's child and get paid, it's counted. The problem in the U.S. is bad enough, because then you don't get any credit for your labor, and I got a whole speeches on that, but it's even worse in developing countries, because frequently if you're dealing in an economy where cash is only coming in, a lot of the economic transactions are not for cash and therefore may not be counted. So we have, for example, in some countries they'll say the women's participation rate, economic participation rate, is 4 or 6%, meaning, you know, the men's would be probably 90 some. Well, that's just on the face of it crazy, because these women are working 18, 20 hours a day, but we don't count it as any kind of economic activity, and yet what they're doing is raising food to feed children and themselves and husbands. So that whole business of, does traditional women's work get any kind of economic value, is a worldwide problem. It's in the World Plan of Action. It's in the basis of most of the women's movement. I talked about the gap between men and women, but the gap between literate women and men is widening. And I defy anybody to prove to me that literacy isn't important. I mean, I know that people can function who are illiterate, but I can't conceive of, in this day and age, a society developing very far with half or more of its population illiterate when you're dealing in the technological world. And I happen to think that education and learning, that it is of the utmost elitism to say, well, what do you educate them for? I happen to think that learning is important in and of itself, because if people learn, they learn how to cope and to do things for themselves. And I think knowledge has a lot of, I think it's very attractive. And to deny somebody knowledge, to say, well, what are you going to educate them for, is to make a very, some kind of distinction that offends me. The wage differential between women and men is increasing worldwide. Problem here, it's a problem everywhere. The number of women heading their own households, I talked about that. I talked about the development process having had negative consequences in many places for women. Most of you know that we're in the decade for women, that it started with International Women's Year at Mexico City. And I don't know if you know, but there is what's called a World Plan of Action. And in that World Plan of Action, there are 5-year minimum goals. And they revolve around education, employment, this question of women's economic participation, the recognition of the economic value of women's work in the home, women's participation, whether it be political or whatever, but there's a fair amount on political participation, because if women aren't part of the decision-making process, who's going to make the decisions for them? The promotion of women's organizations. I feel very strongly that an individual's power is magnified when that individual joins with others in an organization. And I guess I would have to say that I got where I am not because of my own efforts, but because I was part of groups. And you just can't replace with your own individual action what you get from groups and what you give to them and what you learn from them, what they teach you. Well, my office is in the State Department. We have a small budget because we are not supposed to change the world for women but make other people change it. We have a small budget for our own projects. We have this eternal argument, shall we do things for women alone or shall we do things with women, making sure they're integrated into all the activities, programs, et cetera, and I say we have to do both. Partly it's the women alone is, as somebody said on at our Thursday meeting, the catch-up process, or the defining process or whatever. So we're really running about three tracks at the same time. We're trying to make the Agency for International Development respond to women's interests. We're trying to identify some of the unique problems and maybe start out something. For example, I'm going to sound like a one track here pretty soon, but nobody can believe, few people in the agency can believe that the female-headed household exists. They don't see.